This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Most of us have a streak of it. It intersects with depression, anxiety and psychosis, as well as the Asperger autistic spectrum. Consultant psychiatrist Dr. Stephen Jambunathan uncovers the obsessive compulsive spectrum in our show today because when we are particular about cleanliness or perfection, we might say, oh, we're a bit OCD about it. But OCD is actually more complicated than that. So we're trying to unpack today what it truly means to be obsessive compulsive. Our phone lines are open. If you or someone you know is concerned about being obsessive compulsive or having OCD, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You'll also be able to reach us by texting 016-201-9000 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. Dr. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hello, apa kabar?
How would you describe the obsessive compulsive spectrum?
Well, like you did say, most of us do have a streak of OCD or obsessive-compulsive behavior. It would be any form of repetitive thinking, impulses, or even actions that cause dysfunction. And as long as either you are bothered about it or others are bothered about it, or it causes you to not function as well at home or at work, then it would be a form of obsessive-compulsive disorder.
And does it have to be, I mean, so for example, for something to be considered a phobia, it has to be an irrational fear. Mm-hmm. With obsessive compulsive disorder, does it have to be irrational obsession? I mean, I could be obsessed about something that is perfectly reasonable, right? Like, I mean, maybe something huge happened in my life and I can't stop thinking about it. Some might say, well, that's a normal thing. You would think about it.
Yeah, that's the tough question, because whether it's a rational thing or irrational. Now, in OCD, generally you can divide it into people who are aware about the rationality and the irrationality and people who aren't. Now, you've got people who have OCD and say, listen, I'm suffering, it's really bad. So that would be a rational feeling about something that you do that's wrong. However, there are this group of people who are not aware of it, and that's totally out. So yes, to answer your question, it's got to be excessive and irrational. Then it would be a disorder.
And that's when you might need to consider. So when do you fall into that that category? Because as we say, most of us have some streak of it. I think everyone's fallen prey to it. You know, it might be as simple as worrying that maybe you left the kettle on this morning, mm-hmm. and you can't stop thinking about it and mm-hmm. you go back. But that's just a day, you know, that's just a few hours. Mm-hmm. At what point does it stretch into becoming a disorder when you might need to have it addressed?
Well, like I mentioned, when it really bothers you or others, or it causes dysfunction. Well, I do have a degree of OCD, I'm sure you do too. It's happened a few times, it's going to happen again and again. Because I once left my door open, unlocked, and my pets ran out. And even this morning as I approached the lift, I thought, did I or did I not lock my door properly? And if I did consciously lock it, I don't go and check. But sometimes I do, especially when I'm stressed out at work. So there you go. If it makes me go to work late, or if I get really pissed off at myself, then I would say, yeah, Stephen, something's wrong. You better go and see somebody about it.
What do you see as the biggest misconception about OCD?
Well, it's not all about checking things or washing your hands or being too worried about contamination. It can be a spectrum of being a healthily obsessed person or obsessive person who's perfectionistic and who does a job really, really well. It can be very productive, but it's a fine line. It could become disruptive also. It could be from picking on others excessively. It could also happen during pregnancy. There's something called perinatal OCD, where mothers become truly obsessed about things. It could be a person who likes to pinch his skin, pick their skin picking, pulling off hair. A very interesting olfactory reference syndrome. A person is terribly worried about their body odors. They keep worrying that the armpits are smelling or whether their toes are smelling, and it becomes excessive. Hoarding, wanting to keep stuff for no reason. You'll be surprised when you go to... I can speak on behalf of myself and many of my friends. You go to the house and you see lots of boxes or excessive antiques and things that you just don't want to get rid of. That is a kind of OCD too. Yeah, so it can come in many ways.
OCD, there's obsessive compulsive disorder. That's mm-hmm. what that stands for. But can you be obsessive without being compulsive?
Yes, some people are compulsive without being obsessive too. It doesn't have to be. To be the disorder that's diagnosable, you don't have to have both an obsession. That means something that makes you worried or that keeps coming back in your mind, and a compulsion, a feeling that you have to do something to reduce that feeling of anxiety. You don't have to have both. It could be one or the other.
And is it related to impulse control at all? I mean, because I assume that if you're compulsive, you know, it's something that you feel that you have to do, even if you might think, well, no, you know, I don't necessarily have to do that right now.
Yes, yes. Actually, quite a few offenders of the law have a degree of OCD where they can't control the impulses. It's by definition recurrent and intrusive thoughts, impulses, and images. So some people just have to go and pinch somebody or push somebody or touch something, especially when it says, do not touch, do not break this glass. It can be an impulsive kind of behavior.
What would you say is the incidence rate of the condition?
Well, classically, texts and research shows that it can be as high as 3%. But, well, if I think I've got OCD but I don't seek help and I'm sure I do have a certain degree, it has also been reported to be as high as 5 to 10% in the general population.
If you say that you might have OCD but you don't seek help, why is that? I mean, like, is it easier than some other conditions to kind of put aside? I mean, with depression, for example, people are often urged to seek help. With anxiety, people are often urged to seek help. Mm-hmm. What about OCD? Is there also an equal recognition that, yeah, you know, maybe it's time to go see the doctor?
Yeah, when it causes dysfunction, you start getting, you start being late at work, or like some students, they're unable to finish the exam questions, answers, because they keep rubbing it off and writing it properly because it's a bit out of shape. Yeah, then it's time to see somebody.
How often do you see this in your own practice?
Actually, very often, because we often treat people with depression, anxiety, and other forms of neurosis symptomatically, and very often we don't go deeper to find out that the core problem is an obsessive quality or a compulsive quality. Yeah.
What are some of the other common behaviors exhibited by those on the obsessive compulsive spectrum? You know, you gave us a few examples earlier, mm-hmm. But as you say, it's a spectrum, so that covers a wide variety of behaviors.
Mm-hmm. As much as it may seem a bit controversial, anorexia nervosa, eating disorders, are also linked to a kind of obsessive-compulsive behavior and thinking style. Gambling addiction, sex addiction also have a degree of obsessive-compulsive nature. And even the autistic Asperger trait or spectrum, where people are extremely rigid about their lifestyle and the way things have to be done and the way things can't be changed, that is also a kind of obsessive-compulsive trait. Yeah.
We have a question from a listener via text. My neighbour will collect stuff to recycle. Her house is stuffed with all this stuff from outside, right into her kitchen and bedrooms, but she will not sell. She even has no place to sleep properly. Is it just hoarding? Because it's also a fire and health hazard. What should I do? And then they go on to ask which government body can take action in this case, which I don't think is our area today, but what can this person do for their neighbour?
Well, it sounds like hoarding, and it can be a health hazard and a safety hazard. Speak to your neighbour, or if your neighbour doesn't want to do anything about it, you could try and speak to the neighbour's relatives. And that would be where as much as you can go. The next would be to make a police report because you're worried about the health situation.
And in talking, how would you suggest the approach to talking to a neighbour who is hoarding? You know, what is the best way to kind of try to make sense to them or try to reach breakthrough to them?
Well, it can be extremely dicey because if you approach this person the wrong way, they can really put up
their walls.
Defenses, yeah, their walls, mm-hmm. and that's it. But if perhaps you could even offer to help recycle the stuff or help this person sort out the stuff, and that would be a good start. And if the person does not want to accept your help, then you could go on to the next step. Yeah, offering to help and see, I could do some stuff for you. I could help you recycle. Because sometimes they're stuck at, or it might be too valuable, so I think I'll keep it for a while. Yeah.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Stephen Jambunathan, consultant psychiatrist, and we're talking about the obsessive-compulsive spectrum, which runs a whole gamut of situations and behaviours. If you've got any questions for Dr. Stephen on feeling like you might be obsessive-compulsive, or you know somebody who is, or if you've just got anything on your mind that you'd like to discuss, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Dr. Stephen Jambunathan, consultant psychiatrist, and we're talking about the obsessive-compulsive spectrum. Our phone lines are open today, so if you've got any questions about being obsessive-compulsive or you know somebody who you're worried about, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we keep using the word spectrum, and that implies that you can start at one point and move, you know, towards another. Is it possible to gradually get worse without intervention?
Yes, people can can grow out of OCD, and they could also become worse. And unfortunately, for some people, when it gets worse, it can be extremely debilitating. I would think it can be one of the most difficult psychological disorders to deal with. And a person could start off with worrying about cleanliness, and after a couple of months, the theme can change to safety. It could change to just ruminations, thinking about numbers and names or words. It could just disappear too. It could be transient, as also we see in the tic disorder, where you have these jerky movements, also related to OCD, but tic disorders are very often transient. It just disappears.
Do we know what would put somebody more at risk for it to get worse, for it to move from just being a transient thing? Say you broke up with somebody and you can't stop thinking or talking about your ex. It just keeps coming up time and time and time and time again. What determines whether this person will just move out of it, or will determine whether this person eventually goes on to exhibit other obsessive-compulsive traits?
It depends on the environment, because there is a strong genetic link with OCD. There's about 30 to 40% genetic contribution. And if you're living in a home where there's other people with obsessive-compulsive patterns, now how are you going to forget about a broken heart when somebody else at home reminds you about it over and over again, about why did you do this, why did you do that, and this should have been done, what if that never ends? So apart from the genetic contribution, the environment is very important, and that could perpetuate the condition.
We have an update on the neighbor situation, and our listener says, I've offered to help to sell and clear the stuff for my neighbor, but she won't allow it. How do you treat such behavior?
Well, perhaps then you should try and speak to some of the person's relatives or closer friends. And you've got to be persistent, because in my experience, it's taken up to even a few years before patients have relented or families have decided to step in and do something about it. So you've got to persevere.
How do you live with somebody on the obsessive-compulsive spectrum? I mean, our listener here is living next to somebody with OCD, possibly with OCD, but some people live in the same house, sleep in the same bed. You know, what does that do to someone?
Well, you either learn to live with it, learn to change it, or then unfortunately, if you can't do either, then you've got to change your environment, maybe leave it. And, if you're living with someone with OCD, gradual changes would help. Little bits of exposure and response prevention. For example, if this person is extremely worried about cleanliness, you could help this person realize that, yes, you don't have to wash the bathroom every day. Let's do it every other day. You see, nothing's happening, so let's try every third day. And once you've locked the door, if you with the presence of mind, if you're sure that you've done it, just walk away and don't go back and check because you know you've done it. But if you go back and check, you're gonna sort of feed that doubt and it'll start snowballing. So little changes, one by one, would be a way to cope.
Is there any way to just... I mean, you hear people talk about tough love a lot. You know, it's time for tough love. It's time to just intervene. Is there any way to break through this cycle that can be very harmful without making these small changes that you're suggesting, but with a major sort of intervention? Or is the path of least resistance in this case the right one to walk on?
Well, the path of least resistance would be the first option, the least intrusive option and the most acceptable way. However, that, if that doesn't work and you really have to do something, then tough love would even possibly mean getting the person to move out for a while until the environment is changed, or even you'd even have to consider hospital admission, because if it's that severe, medication would be a must. And while the person's away, changes in the house environment can be made. I've had therapists going to people's house and changing things around, moving the furniture around, dirtying the house, and not allowing them to rectify the situation. Eventually, they get used to it. So sometimes removing the person away will be necessary.
If you've got any questions about obsessive-compulsive disorder or spectrum, if you've ever called yourself a little bit OCD and you want to check whether that might be true, give us a call. Our phone lines are open. It's 03-77-109-000. You can text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We talked about how it intersects with other conditions like depression, anxiety, psychosis, and Asperger's and autism. Why does it intersect that way?
That's a very interesting question. Obsessive compulsive disorder used to be considered an anxiety disorder, but over the past decade or so, we've come to realize that it is not. It is something different altogether, and it's very interesting because it's got a little bit of everything. The more severe type of obsessive compulsive disorder has a component called delusional beliefs. Now, a person with severe obsessive-compulsive disorder may be so worried about cleanliness that taking a bath could be too tedious. They would take 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, so they give up. They stop bathing, and they actually end up smelling of urine and feces and really terribly dirty because they can't start cleaning. So that would be a person moving into the schizo-obsessive side. OCD with a little bit of psychosis. When you're emotionally drained because you have to repeat or you keep defeating yourself with obsessions and compulsions, you could sink into depression. And just being worried about anything would lead to anxiety. With regards to the autistic and the Asperger spectrum, yes, the rigidity of thought and rigidity of habits would show an overlap of the Asperger traits or the autistic traits and obsessive compulsive disorder. Talking to somebody who goes on and on and on and on about the same thing and in great detail, and everybody else is yawning but this person is totally into it, would be a kind of autistic behavior and surely a great degree of obsessive compulsive behavior.
So would treating those other conditions, the psychosis, the depression, the anxiety, minimize the obsessive-compulsive behavior, or are they things that need to be addressed separately?
Tough one. I think when the new diagnostic criteria, the DSM-6, eventually comes out, maybe in about 10 years from now, I'm sure they're going to say that, yes, you have to treat it separately. But for now, the main belief is that you treat the obsessive-compulsive core problem and everything else falls in place.
Right now, what is the latest in research say about the role of serotonin in OCD?
Well, it's still the biggest player, as it also is in depression and in anxiety disorders, but in a different part of the brain. And the key medication... of course, therapy being the first line of intervention, medication would be medicines that enhance the serotonin levels in our body, like antidepressants.
There seems to be a lot of ongoing research. It's not just limited to serotonin. Are there any significant findings that you'd like to share?
Yes. In severe cases, we are moving towards the possibility of psychosurgery, laser surgery, to make fine cuts in certain parts of the brain to disrupt that obsessive-compulsive circuits in the brain. There's also now growing research on eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, because there are beliefs that obsessive-compulsive beliefs are similar to post-traumatic stress disorder kind of reliving or memory loops. And yeah, so we are beginning to use EMDR more in OCD too.
So it's all about, what I'm hearing then is that in some ways it's all about trying to short circuit those repetitive loops that OCD happens within, you know, that kind of thought loop that just keeps occurring. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly. To short circuit that loops that go round and round and round, yeah.
We have a listener who wants to remain anonymous asking, when he experiences something bad or unpleasant, he makes a hand gesture like a throwing motion or a shoving away. So I suppose like a tick of sorts. Mm-hmm. Is this OCD? Can the behavior be changed?
Well, if it disturbs the person, yeah, it would be a kind of habitual thing that, well, it depends. It depends, actually, whether it means something to the person. If they don't do the gesture, would it have a magical connotation? Well, if I don't move my hand in a certain way, then something's going to happen to somebody else. My mother's going to die, or I'm going to have a car accident, or my pet's going to fall ill. If there's a meaning to it in that way, yes, then you would call it a kind of obsessive-compulsive disorder. But it could be just a superstition, a simple habit where this person wants to maintain.
But in this case, I suppose, since they feel strongly enough about it, mm-hmm. to call or to try to, you know, discuss it, I'm assuming that it's something that they don't like. Mm-hmm. Can it be changed? Can it be removed from their repertoire of habits?
Surely. I would suggest that this person try and search the net or websites for any psychologist first, to start some form of behavioral therapy, maybe a little bit of cognitive behavioral therapy to break down things, to write it down on paper, to find out the relevance and the significance. And then it might mean less, so the person will realize that they don't have to. If it goes on, medication may help. However, I think this person should also go back and reflect about other aspects of their life where they probably do also have other forms of obsessive, compulsive habits that they may not be aware of, and because it's normally not, there's normally a bigger picture to it.
Our phone lines are open. That number is 0377109000. You can also text 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. With so many different things going on the spectrum, how do you definitively diagnose somebody with OCD?
Personally, I prefer not to diagnose OCD. I would just say, okay, listen, we're dealing with OCT, obsessive-compulsive traits, or obsessive-compulsive behavior, and let's do something about it. As long as there is unpleasantness, discomfort, personally, or within a relationship, or in performance, then I would say, yeah, it is a problem that we have to address. It's not causing increased efficiency, but unpleasantness.
We have Ayman on Twitter who says, when I was little, I used to spell every word of anything that I saw, or I spoke involuntarily. Was that a form of OCD? This is when he was a kid.
Yeah, not really, because it very often, I mean, all of us surely have transient phases of obsessive, compulsive, or repetitive patterns, and most of us grow out of it. So I would say no. Spelling every word you see is actually a good habit. Good for your your language command.
Another question from a listener. I always imagine situations that never ever happen. Sometimes my emotions go up and down with these thoughts, or I have negative thoughts of things that always come before the positive ones. I tend to believe these negative thoughts are true, even though they might not be. Is this OCD?
Well, it's possible we would have to speak more, but this seems like just simple cognitive distortions, a habit where we choose the more negative things for no real reason, But if one writes things down and assesses the pros and cons, you realize that it doesn't make sense. So it could be just a personality trait of being a little bit pessimistic.
So in this case, you know, considering that it's disturbing their emotions, you mm-hmm. know, they're feeling it, they're feeling their emotions change with these thoughts and it's affecting them in that way. How do we solve that? I mean, how would they go about trying to address that?
Perhaps you could do some online reading on cognitive behavioral therapy. There are some simple practical self-help books that show you how to write things down and just to make sense of it on paper, not just thinking about it because it can be a big, woolly picture. And also we would want to know whether there's a meaning to it. Do I have to do this? Do you have to think of that because of this? If there's a reason to it, if there's a system about it, then yes, you would think it might be a degree of obsessive compulsive ruminations.
Another anonymous listener, I have a family member who is a serious lifelong hoarder. There are rooms of junk. What do I do? Where do I find professional resources in Malaysia? Do I Google psychiatrists? Do I just visit a doctor? You know, I've always known they have all the symptoms of a hoarder. But how do you even get people to acknowledge psychiatric problems and get help? Older people don't acknowledge it at all. And nearly everyone in the family has a little OCD.
I think whatever resources that are available nearest would be the first step. If there's a GP or a doctor nearby, go and seek advice from this doctor. Doing a search online for psychologists, therapists, you would find lots of them now. There's so many psychologists who are available and looking to help in all these conditions. They may have to make house visits that would require consent, but at least discussing something with a psychologist, or for that matter, even a psychiatrist. Like, we have psychiatrists in almost all the general hospitals now and some of the smaller hospitals too. Just make an appointment, come and see them and start from somewhere. It doesn't have to be with that person.
We seem to be having questions about hoarding quite a bit when it comes to OCD. What is the thinking, or what is happening when somebody chooses to hoard or when somebody starts hoarding? Because, I mean, for this person's family member, it's serious lifelong hoarder. So it sounds like it's something that's been going on for quite some time.
The reasons behind hoarding, one could be, the core thing could be a doubt whether there could be a use for it. What if I throw it away? So it could be an obsessional doubt. And the other could be just a pure wanting to possess things. I just want things around me. It gives me security. It makes me feel better. And, of course, a rationalization would be, why waste?
A question. Sexual compulsivity, for example, compulsive masturbation, addiction to pornography and so on, seems to resemble OCD quite a bit in terms of the experience of anxiety until the sexual obsession is neutralized through compulsion or sexual acting out. In what ways is it similar to OCD, and in what ways is it different?
Okay, but it could be purely hormonal, which is seen in younger people who have a precocious puberty kind of thing, where their minds are still young, but their bodies are more mature, so it's just out of sync. So you've got this 11-year-old kid with an 18-year-old hormonal body kind of thing, and they can't cope. So that would lead to some sexual obsessions. It could be just pure psychopathic, which is totally unacceptable, a person with lack of remorse, lack of conscience. That would be something totally different. And then you could have this obsessive-compulsive sexual compulsions where a person feels compelled to do something about their sexual urges, and once it's done, they feel guilty. And when they feel guilty, they feel anxious. And when they feel anxious, they feel they've got to do it again to rectify it, and there starts the circle of doubt.
So in answer to this person's question, then, there is a significant overlap between the obsessive-compulsive spectrum or traits and sexual compulsivity.
Yes, and also pathological gambling. Yeah, it's having to finish something that's never going to end.
We have a question now from James on the line about a friend of his. James, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a friend, doctor, who's a doctor. She's about 28. She's obsessed, like when she talks, when you reply back, when she has said something, you must say exactly the same words. If there's any difference in any word, then she wants you to repeat it, she gets agitated. And then worse, she asks you to write the sentence or what you have spoken right on the paper and then read it back to her. And this has been going on for some time. What could be the reason? Is this the OCD?
Hi, James. Thanks for the question. Yes, it sounds very much like quite a serious state of OCD where people with OCD force other people to do things. And being the loving family or the loving friends, they oblige. What they're actually doing is they're enabling the person to become worse.
But then she argues and she fights and she loses her temper if we don't, they don't do that. So I think she has got some gone for some treatment, but that thing still comes back every now and then. Is that any cure for that sort of a thing, or you just keep being...
No. You mustn't keep going because you're only going to make it worse, and then it becomes more consolidated, and it just everyone around suffers. Like OCD is a family disorder, and the problem is family being loving tend to reduce the stress by complying.
Now, what is the best thing to do?
If this person has seen a doctor already, I think the family should go back to the doctor and find out whether. Firstly, if it's so severe, whether the medication is appropriate and adequate in dose, and whether there are other kinds of therapy with apart from medication that needs to be used for the patient.
Okay. I think they have seen someone. She is on some medication. She's okay. But then suddenly, I think every now and then, that was when she used to have this. It was really bad. She would fight, scream, and yell, lose her temper if he didn't say the exact words.
Yeah, but cannot. Now. The family have to be much, much more firm and not allow it. Because once you allow a little bit of repetition, then it's like a plant getting into a crack of a wall, and it grows and grows and grows, and finally the wall breaks because a little root got in.
Hope that helps, James. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
More questions via text now. We have George asking, what is your recommendation to face sexual obsessions? Are there any step-by-step guidance or medication?
The best would be to seek help from a professional, because you've got to know to what degree it is and whether it's totally consuming. And this is a bit difficult to do alone. I would say that it's best that you see a psychologist first as the first entry point, and consider medication later on, if at all necessary.
We have the listener who asked earlier about sexual compulsivity mm-hmm. has a follow-up question, which is, how then do you differentiate any addiction from OCD? Because obsession and compulsion are present in any addiction.
Well, it does involve, it does share similar circuits in the neuronal pathways of the brain, but the reward-seeking area... is much more involved in when it comes to addictive behavior. It's a part of the brain called the amygdala, where you get a sense of pleasure from gratification from your addiction. Whereas in obsessive compulsive disorder, there's a level of anxiety if you don't do it. And when you do it, you get this temporary relief, but then it comes back again. Similar circuits, it overlaps, but not all the same pathway.
I'm putting out a final call for phone calls or to get in touch if you've got any questions about obsessive compulsive spectrum, obsessive compulsive traits. If you're worried about yourself or a friend, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. A question from a listener. There are a lot of similarities between perfectionism and OCD. What's the difference between the two?
The difference is whether you like your boss or whether you hate him, because a very good boss can be a perfectionistic person. But there's, again, another fine line between whether this person really expects you to do well or whether this person is obsessed about it. And if people around or people working with a perfectionistic person is not very happy, or many of them, or it's a significant difference, of opinion, then I would think it's more of an obsessive compulsive disorder.
Can tapping and turning of eyeball exercise help to reduce OCD? I think this is the eye. Am I right in saying this is EMDR?
EMDR. Although it means eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, it does not have to be just moving the eyes from left to right, following an object or your fingers. It can be also this tapping on either side of your, right and left side of your shoulder or your knee, or sounds. Snapping a finger on both sides, right and left, alternatively. Yes, it does. It can help, but it's got to be done in a structured manner, just not looking from right to left, right to left.
What would treatment for obsessive-compulsive behavior involve?
The simple obsessive-compulsive behavior would be... The first line would be simply exposure and response prevention. If a person was extremely worried about dirt... To be able to touch something and not go and wash your hands and realize that nothing is going to happen and nothing did happen, and move on to touching slightly dirtier things and even more dirtier things, and realizing that it's not going to make a difference, because at the end of the day, you're going to go home, you're going to have a bath, and you're going to go to sleep. And no illness, no infection, and nothing happened. To a more intrusive thing of maybe eye movement desensitization and medication from the milder antidepressants to using antidepressants with stronger medicines that actually help in schizophrenia. So from mild therapy to slightly more intrusive therapy, and then finally even physical force of removing the person from the environment, and medication-wise from mild antidepressants to more potent psychotropic drugs.
We have a bunch of text messages that have come in with someone saying, I'm exactly what the caller described, always in a bad temper, in arguments, more OCD, like things need to be done a certain way, but I'm still coping with life. Most of my family members won't acknowledge psychiatric problems. They would blame it on a knock on a head that I received when I was an adolescent. Hoarding gets labeled as lazy, dirty, unorganized. How do I get my family around to start understanding and seek help?
Well, if you feel that it's something that's involving your behavior, perhaps you should go and see somebody first and let this professional guide you on how to get your family involved. Yes, of course, it's natural that people want to avoid having anything to do with psychology or with psychiatry. But yes, if you feel the need, you start off by seeing somebody, and then the family will be brought in.
And a question now that I think is stemming from our conversation about impulse control. Someone says, my son drinks and womanizes. Is this OCD?
I really don't think so. I think it's just a choice of behavior. Yeah, but then there might be some obsessive problems that this person has, and he or she might be using self-destructive behavior to just cope, temporary relief.
Q says, my son is 19 and he started to smell his fingers daily since he was 15 years old. Is this OCD? How can we help him?
Oh, it sounds like that interesting syndrome of olfactory reference syndrome. This person may be worried that his fingers are smelling maybe of feces or maybe of genitalia or maybe of just dirt. It sounds like an obsession about smell. And how do you deal with it? Try and convince your son to seek help. Perhaps simple basic things of a good hygiene, short nails, and a good bath once a day might help this person cope better. And if that does not help, yes, I think seeing a psychologist would be a good idea.
It sounds as if one of the main problems with obsessive-compulsive behavior is that these are small issues. I mean, they appear at first glance to be very small. You know, someone sniffing his fingers, somebody having a hand gesture. Mm-hmm. These are not things that, people worry about in a very big way. How do you convince people to get help when they could say, well, you know, this is just a small thing. Why do you care?
I suppose you can say that because there are lots of people who do small things and... it doesn't affect anybody. But if a caring friend feels that there's more to it, which there often is, what you see outside the door is not what you see when the person shuts the door in the room. You see a myriad of things going on, dancing and compulsions and patterns of behavior which we don't know. However, if this person is functioning well and good, why kachao? Leave it be.
It's so it only needs to be talked about once it becomes an issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is it possible to completely overcome this?
Yes. Surely. For some people, it takes time. It takes months, even years. In my experience, even up to a decade. But for in some cases, even severe OCD has been reversed in a couple of months with intensive therapy and medication. So it can be overcome. Yes.
And finally, if you could share one piece of advice with people on the spectrum, and not the autistic spectrum, but the obsessive compulsive spectrum, what would that advice be?
Anyone who feels that they might have a repetitive form of behavior or know somebody who might have this problem, please be open to speak to somebody about it. Don't be embarrassed because most of us have a little bit of it too.
Thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Stephen. I've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Jambunathan, consultant psychiatrist. We've been examining obsessive-compulsive spectrum today. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.